Good morning, my friends. Good morning, everybody. Hey, Lou. Good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing today?
I'm good. How are you feeling?
Very well. Very well.
Good, good. So, first of all, to everybody that is listening and to you, Lou, just want to caution about what's going on in the world about the coronavirus, COVID-19. If you can, I mean, here in the United States, just look at the CDC guidelines. My wife, myself, my whole family, most of us here are physicians, and we are being very cautious. I'm at that age where I have to be very careful, so I'm quarantining myself at home, reading, studying, making sure I don't go out for anything until we know what's going on.
Right.
But if I do have to go out, I would be cautious not to touch anything, not to shake hands for sure, just do basically the Hindu way of saying hello, namaskar.
Yep.
Don't kiss anybody on the cheeks. Don't stand within 3 feet of anybody, all those kinds of things. So with that as my suggestion to all of you, let's move on to the Gita. So today we're going to be talking about chapter 3, verse 36, 37, two verses that I think are extremely, extremely important to everybody. I would like you to listen to this. If possible, listen to it again. Take out paper, pencil, and write down what you get from it, because it's not me, it's the sages, your ancestors from thousands of years ago who have put this down. Makes a lot of sense. And as a physician, I can tell you that when we talk of anger, anxiety, jealousy, hatred, desires, we have a different way of handling it in the Western society today. We have a way of saying, okay, count to 10 and let the anger dissipate, or something like that. This way of looking at anger and jealousy, greed, envy, arrogance, all of this is going to blow your mind and where it comes from and what it does. You see, Lou, I think when we first started, there was this question of whether the Gita was a religious kind of thing where people would say, you know, this is going to tell us how to do prayers,
right,
and what rituals to do and which temple to go to and how many candles to light. And you've seen now, this is what, our 43rd episode?
43rd, today? Yeah.
43rd episode. Nowhere have I said anything about prayers. The Gita hasn't said anything about do this ritual, do that ritual, pray to this, pray to that, nothing like that. This is all, and this is why I took to it like a duck to water. You know, when I first heard about it, which was when I was in my late 40s or early 50s, as a physician, I said none of this religious ritual made much sense to me, as it probably doesn't to most of you listening to this. But this, what the Gita tells us, makes a lot of sense to most people. And I would like you to really reflect on this and then maybe take paper and pen and make some notes and see if it will help you as much as it has helped me.
It's more philosophy and mindset than worship, right?
It is definitely not worship.
Yeah.
So whether it's philosophy or science, that's something for everybody to get. You know, philosophy has a different connotation. Science has a different connotation.
Right.
But as the listeners listen to this, maybe they can decide. So verse 36 in chapter 3 is when Arjuna asks a question for Krishna. Arjuna says, what is it? What is that force which propels a person to commit sin? What prompts a human being, as though he is propelled by a superior power, although he may not want to, as though somebody is forcing us to perform this sin.
Right.
So we've all experienced that at some time or the other. You say, I don't want to do this, but this like uncontrollable urge that you do it.
Right.
So that's a very, very important question that Arjuna asked, that all of us should have asked or should have thought of, but we don't. And this is sage Vyas putting it in the mouth of Arjuna on the battlefield, asking Krishna this. Now, the first question is, when it says, what is it that propels a person to commit sin? What we need to do is to define sin as defined in the Gita or the Upanishads. most people today, based on other religions, misunderstand sin as, quote unquote, doing something bad.
Right.
I stole something, I have committed sin. I killed something, I have committed sin. I told a lie, I have committed sin. Not true at all, according to the Gita. The Gita says, if, for instance, I tell a lie in the service of doing something good,
right,
and I don't feel bad about it, I have not committed any sin.
Right.
It's what happens in my mind, the disturbance of my mind upon performing an action is what is considered sin. So if I tell a lie to protect a woman that has burst into my office and said, please protect me, there are 7 men outside with swords looking to kill me, and I say, I can't fight the 7 men,
yep,
please hide under this desk, and then these guys burst in and say, did a woman come here? And I say, no, right, this is Gautam Jain's example. And I say, no, I've told a lie. But the men turn around and rush out, and the woman says, I'm so grateful to you. Do I feel, have I committed a sin for telling a lie? I don't feel anything. There's no effect on my mind. There's no mental disturbance.
Right.
So I have not committed a sin. So when Arjuna asks, what is it that propels a person to commit sin? He's not talking about doing something that's bad, but he's saying, what is it that will, I do something that I know I should not be doing that causes me mental disturbance,
right,
that sin. What,
yes,
is that? So sin is your reaction to action. If your mind is disturbed, your mind is in a state of sin. It is not the action which is the sin. If the action results in your mind being disturbed, then you have committed a sin. Therefore, desire is said to be sinful. Desire in and of itself. Why? Because the existence of the desire itself means you're disturbed.
Right.
You have a desire for something, you can't be focused, you can't be peaceful, you feel disturbed. Desire is insatiable. The minute you get what you wanted as the desire, another desire pops up.
Right.
So throughout your life, your mind is disturbed. All of us, our mind is constantly disturbed from the day we are born to the day we die because of this mental disturbance for desire. A young infant desires his diaper to be changed, milk, his mother to hold him. From that desire, just goes on till the deathbed. So again, sin is when you are aware of what you're doing and the action disturbs your mind. A person who doesn't know what he's doing, without knowing it, he's not doing anything, doesn't feel any guilt, no sin. For instance, if I kill an animal, an innocent animal, or any living being, and I feel bad about it, my mind is disturbed, I think about it, I say, you know, the last minutes of that animal as I killed it were horrible to see. I'm disturbed, I'm thinking about it,
yeah,
I'm feeling guilty about it, that's sin. But as I'm walking, I step on an ant or a bug or some other animal, maybe even a larger animal than a bug, but I don't know about it. I mean,
right,
it's in the dark. I have no sin about that at all. Same thing with a soldier. If he doesn't feel guilty about what he's doing, he thinks he's doing it for the right reasons, and he kills another human being, he doesn't feel guilty, there's no sin over there. So it's not a religious kind of sin.
This is Arjuna's battle, right, on the battlefield,
Arjuna's
dealing with warring with his cousins.
Correct.
Yeah.
So he would have sin if he went into battle because his mind is disturbed over that. So same thing with karma, by the way. If you do something that you don't think you're doing wrong, it's not the action that causes the karma to come to you. It is the thought process, when your intention, that when you have a conscious choice to do something and you do it, good or bad,
mm-hmm,
that's when the karma accrues to you. So again, verse 36, being impelled, being compelled, being propelled to do something that is wrong. So it doesn't apply with somebody, a parent, a teacher, a guru, telling you do something, and they tell you to do something that's wrong, and you know it's wrong. That's not what he's talking about here.
Right.
He's talking about you yourself. Tell yourself, I know this is wrong, but something in me forces me to do it. Have you ever had that experience, Luke?
God, yeah. Every night when I'm staring at like a chocolate bar or a snack or something, and it's like... I want something to eat, but I know it's wrong, and it causes me distress.
So you like chocolate?
I do like chocolate, yeah.
Okay, good. So let's talk about that as we come about, because basically we all like something, and all of this, what Krishna says is all of this comes from likes and dislikes.
Right.
You wouldn't feel that way if it was something that you didn't like that was sitting by your bedside. You only feel that way about a chocolate bar that's sitting by your bedside. Right. So likes and dislikes are distinguished by Krishna from desire and anger. Now, here's where the pen and paper comes in, because it's important to note down. We all have this feeling. We know that something isn't right to do, yet we do it. Mm-hmm. Like in your case, you said the chocolate.
Yeah.
Let's say, I don't know anything about you in that respect, but suppose you were diabetic.
Right.
Suppose one is diabetic, and the doctor says, you may not eat this sweet, right? But I like it. Something compels us to do something that we know we shouldn't be doing. The doctor says you're diabetic, severely diabetic.
Right.
You shouldn't be doing this. And Arjuna is asking, what is that something? Now that we know the question, obviously the curiosity comes to anybody who's listening to this. You know, I never thought about this. Yeah, what is that something?
Right. I know it's bad for me. I know I shouldn't be doing it, and yet I just really want it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what we talked about so far, chocolate, and that is mild compared to severe likes, dislikes, desires,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
A man who's married, having an affair.
Right.
Somebody like Epstein, somebody like Weinstein, somebody like Clinton or whatever,
big
politicians, corporate executives, or people who defraud the country, mm-hmm. steal money, have ways of getting money out of banks or
right.
usurping things. Those are bigger crimes that result in much bigger danger. But again, those people are compelled. Why? Even being the president of the United States or some big guy who's got billions of dollars, what compels him? Lord Krishna says the main reason we are forced to commit sin, to do something that will have a disturbing effect on our mind, is, band roll, drum roll, desire and anger.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't say desire and anger separately. He says desire and anger are one and the same.
Oh, really?
Right?
Yeah, interesting.
And he explains how. He does not separate desire and anger. He says they are the same. And he says both arise from rajas. Remember we talked about sattva, rajas, and tamas.
Right.
I don't want to go into that again, but basically tamas is laziness.
Mm-hmm.
Sattva is absolute tranquility, peace, equanimity, and rajas is activity.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that the kama and krodha, kam is desire. So we've heard of the Kama Sutra.
Right.
Right? Kam in that sense is desire.
Mm-hmm.
Krodha is anger. Kam, krodha is considered one entity by Krishna. And he says kam, krodha actually produces rajas, which is activity, the nature of oneself to do activity, and that activity promotes further desires and anger. So it's a vicious cycle.
Right.
Rajas produces desire and anger. Anger and desire together produce rajas. So let's take an example.
Hmm.
An example of a person sitting quietly. He's sitting there peaceful, contemplating, maybe sitting reading a nice peaceful book, or just humming to himself, whistling. All of a sudden, as you watch him from a distance, you see that that peaceful attitude starts to change into activity.
Yeah.
He starts to look a little restless. He's starting to look here and there. He's sighing. He's moving his body. What is going on? First, a thought occurred to him about wanting something.
Right.
He said, what would that be like to get X, whatever, right? He wants to get up. He wants to walk to his neighbor's house. He says, wonder if my neighbor's home. It would be nice to go into whatever the thought is.
Right.
Thought turns to a desire, turns to action.
Right.
So he says, it's nice when I go over to my neighbor's house. I go knock on his door. He comes out. He says, come on in. We sit down, have a glass of lemonade or coffee or whatever. We talk. He likes that. I like it. The thought occurs to me, turns into a desire, turns into rajas.
Right.
Now, I've moved from sattva, which is when I was sitting there very peacefully, calmly, being very equanimous in my thought process, to being restless by being rajasic because of my likes for going across and having that lemonade or coffee.
Right.
And my dislike to just sitting here doing nothing, to now becoming a strong desire. So what happens to that sattva when the rajas pops up? Sattva recedes into the background. Understand that there are three gunas, three natures that each one of us has. When any one manifests, the other two go into the background.
I see.
So when I'm sattvic, sitting there being very peaceful, the rajas is in the background, so also is the tamas. When the rajas comes in front, the tamas and the sattva go back. So when in the evening, sun goes down and tamas emerges, and I'm lazy, I want to sit back, I want to put my feet up, watch TV,
right,
have a drink, you know, just listen to some music. I don't want to do any studies. I don't want to do any activity. I don't want to fix anything. I don't want to go across to my neighbor and talk to him. I just want to sit down and be lazy.
Right.
So what happens to the other gunas? They recede into the background. So when what Lord Krishna says is, it is desire, it is anger. This is verse 37, born of the quality of rajas. So it's born of the quality of rajas. So it has some rajas in it because of its parent, which is desire and anger. It's all devouring, all sinful. Know this to be the enemy here. Now we'll see later on that how often Lord Krishna or Vyasa, who wrote this, has talked of this as enemy. He talks of likes and dislikes,
right,
which we talked about, liking chocolate or not liking certain something else. And he talks of desire and anger. He talks of likes and dislikes and calls it roadside bandits. And he talks of desire and anger as enemies. Now, he's talking to Arjuna, who is a warrior, warrior par excellence, a best warrior there is.
Right.
So he has to talk in terms of enemies. You'll see that as this goes on, he says, where do these enemies reside? Where do they hide in your body, in your mind? Where do they hide? Why? Because to a warrior, you got to say, look, just like you going into battle, you got to look to see where is your enemy. Mm-hmm. Is he hiding behind the mountain? Is he hiding behind the caves, in the caves? And you got to take the battle to him. So, some Sanskrit words here, because they come frequently. Kam is desire, krodh is anger. Mahashanaha means all devouring, like fire.
Yeah.
So desire is mahashanaha, which means all devouring, voracious eater, like fire, never enough. You keep giving fire more and more fuel, and it'll keep taking it, and it can last for hundreds of years. So also desire, never enough. Mahapapama, enemy, a great sinner, anger. That's what anger is.
Mm-hmm.
So in verse 34, Krishna says, raga and dvesha, which is likes and dislike, reside in the sense, in our sense organs, in our senses.
Right.
This is where we have to control it. I'm jumping ahead when he's talking about how to control these things. He says this is the easiest part, even though it's difficult. If you're going to be able to control it, you control it here, which right, is at the senses. Raga, dvesha, likes and dislikes arise from our senses. So eyes like to see things that are appealing, attractive.
Right.
Ears like to hear it. All five senses together like to see certain things that have all five senses. Something that looks beautiful, smells beautiful, tastes beautiful, sounds beautiful, your mind is pleased, something like that. So, likes and dislikes are like what you said, chocolate, silence, traffic, heat, cold, right? I like silence. So, somebody, as I'm working, is making some noise, humming, talking loudly. My like says, I don't like this. My dislike says, hey, stop, I don't like it. It's disturbing my mind, this like and dislike. Whereas if I said, that's the nature of this world, I can't be totally quiet everywhere, I have to learn to adjust to it.
Right.
It's easier if I snip it right in the bud right here. And I don't know if we talked about this experiment with the marshmallows. I think we did.
I think we did, but refresh my memory.
a psychologist, I forget his name, did an experiment, and he said to a kid, all these kids that he brought in, he says, I'm going to give you a marshmallow. You like marshmallows? The kid says, yes. He says, if you eat it now, you get this one. You can eat it, but if I go out of the room and come back in a few minutes and you haven't eaten it, I'll give you a second one.
Right.
And those that ate it, as soon as he went out of the room, he followed them later on in life and they became adults. And he found that there were those kids who didn't eat it and they became very successful as life went on.
Right.
And this is the marshmallow experiment. I can give you the quotations of the articles and the authors if you want in another episode. But he said he videotaped this, and he videotaped it years later, and he said these were the successful people because they were able to delay gratification.
Right.
Now, he termed it in terms of delaying gratification. You can gratify yourself by eating the marshmallow now, or you can delay it for a certain period of time. If you can delay your gratification, you're going to be more successful. What Krishna says is control your sense organs.
Yes.
Now,
yeah, they stepped in between their mind and their sense organs, right?
Correct.
Between their thought and their sense organs, yeah.
Now, what the videotape shows is that these kids who were successful in not eating the marshmallows versus the ones who ate it, if you look at the videotape, the ones who ate it kept staring at the marshmallow.
Yep.
Their eyes couldn't get enough of that, and they couldn't resist the temptation, they ate it. The ones who were able to delay the gratification looked at the marshmallow, looked at the professor who was talking to him. He said, I'm going to go out, don't eat it. I'll come back and I'll give you a second one. Would maybe glance at the marshmallow, quickly turn their eyes and look away.
Disengage their sense organ.
Disengage their sense organ. Control it at that point. So that's what he is saying. Control it. Second thing is your mind. If you like something, like the chocolate, even if you take it out of your mind sight or the marshmallow, if your mind keeps saying he's not looking at the chocolate or the marshmallow, but his mind says, wow, that would taste very nice, very nice. It actually promotes a greater desire in you. So that we're going to come to.
Interesting. See, I just keep it out of the house.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should. So that's actually a good point. If a person is an alcoholic, you don't want to go into a bar.
Right.
If you're trying to control your desires to stop drinking, you don't want to go in a bar. If one is a gambler, you don't want to go in a casino. If you're a chocoholic and you like chocolates, you want to keep the chocolate out of the house. All temptations that you're trying to get away from, push them away.
Because that impulse reaction is the important thing here. Delaying that or just bypassing that impulse reaction to actually just grab it and eat it. That's a very important part of this.
So Gautam Jain was telling us that music in the olden days was basically non-sensual. It was relaxing. It was peaceful. He says today's music is oftentimes very sensual.
Yep.
It generates, the videos, forget it. You know, just talking about the music itself with the beat and so on is generating more rajas instead of being sattvic. If you're peaceful, calm, and you hear a nice beat, fast drumming, your heart starts beating, you get excited, your endorphins start circulating, and it generates those desires. So when you keep thinking of what you like, it generates strong desires, which is calm. So the first is likes and dislikes, which grow into desires and anger. So if you keep looking,
this is basically the basis of all advertising right now, isn't it? You're sitting there on TV and someone puts a cup of coffee in front of you and you go, oh, I want a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Very true. You're sitting at night and you're watching TV, you're tamasic, your body says, I just want to eat and drink. What do they show? Commercials of beer.
Yep.
And steak and shrimp and lobster and
pizza.
Stuff like that. Pizza.
Yeah.
So it's tempting you by looking at your, feeding your sense organs to do this. So likes and dislikes, when you keep thinking about it, it actually generates more desire.
Right.
So when you keep thinking of your dislikes, what happens is you get strong anger. And you, whatever it is, it becomes your enemy. So you dislike something, whatever. Think about it, a person, for instance. Keep thinking about that person, what he did, what he didn't do. I didn't like this, I didn't like that about him. Pretty soon, you start to feel towards him a strong anger, and he becomes your quote-unquote enemy. If you keep contemplating objects of pleasure, you develop a strong desire for that those objects.
Yeah.
This is another thing we need to keep writing down, to say, initially, your thoughts for something are a small little trickle. Multiple trickles like that becomes a small rivulet, which becomes multiple rivulets become a river and becomes a raging torrent of a river, and that's a strong desire for something. So if you keep contemplating, thinking about something, it's going to become a strong desire. So the minute you say, oh, I would like to have a chocolate, it's not in the house, that's going to generate another thought.
Right.
I could easily run to CVS and buy a chocolate.
Right.
It's only 5 minutes walk away. You keep thinking about it, it's going to become a desire, which then produces action, and you will get up and go. So you need to stop. Just like you have to move your sense organs away from watching it, looking at it, smelling it, you have to stop thinking about it. If you keep contemplating objects of desire, objects of pleasure, you will get a strong desire for those objects. We then become attached to those objects, and attachment becomes a strong desire to possess those objects.
Right.
Now, we're talking about chocolates and things like that, but imagine when it comes to wealth that right. doesn't belong to you, mm-hmm. or a man or a woman. You know, you're sitting in the office, and in front of you, there's a man who's well-built and very kind and very gentle and handsome and blonde or whatever. And you're married and your husband is at home, nice guy, but you keep looking at this guy.
Right.
And you have to stop from looking. You have to stop from thinking about him. Stop your fantasies. When I first came here and I started to learn about psychiatry, one of my professors told me, look, if your patient is thinking something, don't let it bother you. Just tell him, listen, a thought is not an action. Go ahead. Thoughts right. are okay. No, yeah. thoughts are not okay. That's wrong. You know, that's a misguided thing to say to somebody. Go ahead, think as much as you want, because right. those thoughts become obsessions and become strong desires. So the Gita says likes and dislikes, raga, dvesha, are roadside bandits. Desire and anger are enemies. When kama and krodha come, likes and dislikes come, you enter into a stage of rajas. Sattva goes into the background, and so along with the sattva goes your knowledge and wisdom. So this is another thing to write down, that when you have knowledge, it is basically just something that you have learned. Like you're listening now, if you haven't known this from before, this is knowledge. It hasn't yet sunk down into the depths of you. It hasn't become your prakriti yet.
Right.
Remember we talked about prakriti,
yes.
which is your second nature. It becomes you. When you die, you take it with you to the next birth, next life. Prakriti is something. That is wisdom. When that knowledge becomes you, it becomes a second part of you, that's wisdom.
Right.
So sattva has this knowledge and wisdom. When rajas comes and you have a thought of flirting with that blonde, handsome guy in front of you, your sattva goes into the background, rajas takes over, and with the sattva going into the background goes your knowledge and wisdom that this is not the right thing to do.
Right.
So you do it. You yeah. put into action things that you later regret. So you can have strong likes and dislikes. Even Krishna had likes and dislikes. But you cannot let them control you. That's the difference.
Right.
No human being can have lack of desires. Every human being has desires. So Vedanta doesn't say don't have likes and dislikes, doesn't say you don't have desires. That's not possible. Vedanta says don't let them control you. Now, what happens? Here's another thing to take out your pen and write down. When your desire is fulfilled, you have an immediate rush of happiness. That rush is only short-lived. It may last for a short period of time, like getting a chocolate.
Right.
Lasts for seconds, maybe a minute. But when you hit a $1 million lottery, it lasts for a longer period of time. Again, but it's always short-lived.
Right.
It's not like the happiness of certain other things that we'll get to in later chapters. So when you get that happiness fulfilled, you think that I'll be okay, but you're not, because it's like fire. The desire says, I want more.
Right.
Immediately, it's another desire pops up. So first thing that happens is more desires pop up. Second thing that happens is when you get whatever it is, let's say wealth, you look outward. Rajas always makes you look outward. Sattva makes you look inward. When you look outward and you see somebody else, you say, well, I've got X many dollars. He has more.
Right.
So I'm jealous. So desire produced now jealousy, right? Because you say, oh, that guy has more than me.
Right.
Or somebody, you look outside and you say somebody has less than you and you have more, but you are more than most of the people, you become proud. So desire degenerated jealousy and pride. Yeah. Let's say your anger, your desire is thwarted and you can't get what the object of your desire. It produces anger. That is most often what happens, and that is why it talks about anger and desire and anger going together, kam and krodh.
Right.
So anger and desire go hand in hand, as an example, as criminals together. So in Sanskrit, it says kam, krodh, lobh, moha, madha, and matsarya, which means desire produces anger when rejected, greed when you say, I got it, I want more, delusion when you say, oh, I have so much, I'm the greatest, arrogance when you think that you're the greatest, jealousy when you think that somebody else has more than you, envy when you think that you have less than somebody else, and pride.
Right.
All of these are negative emotions. Now, Vedanta does not say not to have desires. That's not possible. It does not say that. What it says is, do not, you can enjoy your desires. It says, do not let the desires control you.
Right.
Because no matter how much wealth you have, there's always going to be a desire for more wealth. You can see that, right? With
sure.
So many people. I don't want to name names. All religions, now here's another thing to write down. All religions have personified desire as if it's a person, because all religions realize that the basic crux of our unhappiness is desire. So in English, in Christianity, we call it Satan or the devil, Shaitan, Asura, Rakshas, and Mara. These are all the names that Gautam has told us different religions call desire.
Right.
So these are desires that are personified as your enemy. Now, we talked before about Prakriti, and I want to stop after I mentioned Prakriti. Prakriti is expressed as likes and dislikes also. So Prakriti plays an important role in creating kama and krodha, or desire and anger. So when you're born with certain likes and dislikes. Keep that in mind, that all people, all beings, even dogs, even animals, even insects, have likes and dislikes.
Sure.
So anybody who has a pet knows that I'm giving the pet food, but he likes certain foods and he doesn't like certain foods.
Right.
So all animals, all beings have likes and dislikes. And these likes, dislikes go into our system, they come back as second nature to us, and you leave this world with them, and they come back with you in the next life. So Gita says they are partners in crime, they are our enemies. Raga Dvesha, likes and dislikes, are like looters. We lose sight of our goal. These looters, likes and dislikes, desire and anger, loot away our peace of mind, our goal, our spiritual wealth. So as we go on in the next verses, we will see that what the Gita says to, what Krishna says to Arjuna is, as a warrior, you should know these are your enemies. You should know where they live, where they reside in your senses, in your mind, in your intellect, and how you should go about destroying them. Very, very important bunch of verses. So friends.
Yeah, you were right. This is a repeat listening right here, this episode.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep coming back to it.
All right, folks, thank you so much for listening. This is the Gita Memoirs of a Psychiatrist. And please send us your comments on Facebook. I would love to hear from you so I can reply to you, ask any questions, comments, suggestions, criticisms, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening.